Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 184. I'm recording it on Sunday, November 15, 2009. The P10 level today is 19. That's less than exciting for stock investors. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLean at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is Slow Burn. The title of the podcast is Market Timing is the Mechanism by Which Market Efficiency is Attained. The ideas in this podcast, I think I have... Oh, first, I guess I had a couple preliminary notes. I had wanted to just report something about John Walter Russell. All of the... For people who are regular readers, or regular listeners, I should say, of the podcast, we talk about... We explore some... exciting, new, controversial ideas about investing at PassionSaving.com. And all of the ideas we explore were developed in the Retire Early and Indexing Discussion Board communities during a series of discussions we refer to as the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate. It's been going on for 7.5 years. We've had hundreds of people make positive contributions. Helpful contributions. My job is sort of to push the debate forward, to sum up what people contribute, and to explore the implications with my own thoughts. And I do that to the best of my ability, I hope. The number one person who has contributed over that time is John Walter Russell. He is the owner, or at least was the owner, of the early -retirement-planning-insights.com website. John is someone I did not know until I put forward the first post in the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate. That was the morning of May 13th, 2002. And John had just retired from his job. He was a government engineer. And he was looking for some things to do to fill up his time. And he was interested in the question I raised, whether valuations affect safe withdrawal rates. And he got interested in that and did some research, and the community, you know, responded with a lot of enthusiasm to what he put forward. And, you know, thus the debate began. And I started working with John. And after we had showed that the conventional safe withdrawal rate studies get all the numbers wildly wrong, and that millions of middle-class workers are going to suffer busted retirements as a result in days to come, we went on with that research. We began examining other aspects of the conventional investing wisdom and found all sorts of things that are wrong, and we just kept going and going and going and ended up creating a lot of calculators together and building websites and all this sort of thing. And John died about almost 2 weeks ago now. I believe it was Tuesday, roughly, you know, this is Sunday, so Tuesday... It will be 2 weeks come this Tuesday. So it's extremely sad for all of us. I mean, for me, I think it's most sad because John was my partner in development of these calculators. He was the most significant community member we've had, and he was my friend. And John and I talked almost daily in some capacity, whether at the blog or through emails. Occasionally by phone. And so that's left a hole in my life. I miss John. I miss John. And we're all going to miss him, as, you know, the research efforts are not going to be up to what they were. Even if we find somebody very talented, I don't think anyone is going to measure up to what John was able to contribute. It was an amazing. John is somebody I point to. When people say, you know, sometimes I'm required in order to describe what's happened with our board communities, people say, oh, why were these boards destroyed? And I have to, you know, describe the goons and all this sort of thing. And campaign of terror against our board communities. People who don't want middle-class workers to learn the realities of stock investing because they made mistakes. We don't blame them for the mistakes, but we do blame them for their behavior after learning of those mistakes. People, when I describe that to people, they will often sort of react in horror, which is, of course, appropriate. But I'll always like to come back by saying, yeah, but there's another side here. This is the most wonderful thing we've ever seen done on the internet when you consider the work product that we're now years ahead of all the quote-unquote experts in our understanding of how stock investing works, we believe. And think about John. Here's a guy. He retires from his job. He's 7.5 years. He's devoted himself 50 hours a week to the retire early and indexing discussion board communities. Not a dime of compensation in that time. And for his efforts, is smeared, all the way here from Kingdom Come by these thugs. But John never let it stop him. He never was ungracious, not once. Always had time for anyone with a question. Not just answer the question. He would start entire research projects that would take, 6 months out of his life. I mean, you're not going to find a finer human being or a smarter human being. And I have long had it on my list of podcasts to do a tribute to John Walter Russell for the work he's done for our community. And my thought with that was to go to the letters to the editor section of his website. And I advise you to do it. It's early-retirement-planning-insights.com. And he has a letters to the editor section. You can go all the way back to when the website was started. And many people have written in and they say very kind things about how John has helped them. And I think that's the greatest tribute to John Walter Russell and his work. And I've wanted to just sort of collect those and read them on a podcast. But, you put it off because there's a lot of other things that need to be done. It's more important to do now, but even now, I feel it's more important to promote John's work and see that he gets the recognition. That's a sadness to me that he did this amazing work and has not yet received, obviously he received the recognition from his readers who wrote in and thanked him, but never the national or worldwide recognition that he deserves as someone who has charted new courses in our understanding of how stock investing works. John died of emphysema. He was a heavy smoker earlier in his life. He's been on oxygen 24 hours a day for several years now. And he asked before he died that he died suddenly. The problem was evident for several years, but he died. It was somewhat of a shock that he died at the time he did. His wife Karen and I discussed this, and she told me that John had asked that in the event of his death, the website be passed to me. So I now have control of the website, and for the time being, I'm leaving it up. I'm hoping to find someone to take over John's work. Whether that's going to happen, I think that's a long shot. I hope to find somebody. I've spoken to somebody today who may be willing to help develop the next calculator, the fifth calculator, the buy and hold reality checker. Hopefully that will go forward. John and I were close to finishing that, at least getting it to a company to build it. But there's one big snag, and that snag is too big for me to get over it by myself. So I need to find some help. Hopefully I'll find that. But anyway, I wanted to say a few words there about John, because all of the work you get at PassionSaving.com and also at Early Retirement Planning Insights is heavily, heavily, heavily influenced by John's work. We've lost a lot. We've lost a lot. And one thing I will say is there were some tributes to John at some of the discussion boards at which he participated. And boy, I mean, the comments were very kind. There were two goons jumped in, Drip Guy and Nords. Nords at Early Retirement Forum and Drip Guy at my blog, A Rich Life. But outside of that, the goons controlled themselves. And many, many, many people who I haven't heard participate in discussions came out of silence to say, this John Walter Russell's a fine man, and I've learned from him, and I appreciate his graciousness and his charity. Karen told me that John thought of his work as missionary work. John was a Christian, and he thought of it as missionary work, helping people learn what the stock selling industry will not tell them about how stock investing works. So anyway, I hope in days to come, John will get the recognition he very, very, very richly merits. All right, the title of this podcast is I did this one almost for the title. The title popped into my head today. Market timing is the mechanism by which market efficiency is attained. They sure don't tell you that in the when they're putting forward this buy and hold passive investing mumbo jumbo, do they? They'll tell you, oh, the market's efficient. Market efficiency is wonderful. But they tell you don't time the market. Well, you can't have market efficiency without market timing. The reason why we have the economic crisis we have today is because the stock selling industry has spent hundreds of millions of dollars persuading us that we don't need to time the market, which makes market efficiency impossible. We should all want market efficiency. It's a wonderful goal. But we've destroyed our hopes of attaining it because we've gone along with these marketing campaigns pushed on us. There's an irony. The people who proclaim the market efficient are the people who have made it so wildly inefficient from 1996 through 2008 and thereby caused the greatest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States. So the title popped into my head, and I haven't been recording podcasts late. The last two, three weeks, I want to move on to some other things. I want to move on to some contacting some other websites. So I feel that we need to generate some political action, really, to take care of our economic crisis. The promotion of buy and hold investing. But I felt I wanted to record this one when the title popped into my head because the irony of the fact that the conventional people push efficient markets, which is a good thing in itself, but then they, at the same time, they push the thing that destroys efficient markets, buy and hold investing, destroys market efficiency. So I almost felt I had to record it just for the title. The ideas are not really new. I think I've mentioned them all in recent podcasts. That's sort of a theme I've been working on lately, the past few months. But this podcast will tie them together perhaps in a package in a way that they haven't been tied together before. So I do see some merit to it. And some of these ideas have been developed in recent months in a sort of helter-skelter way. So they haven't been pulled together in one place. So it may be useful to do that. And certainly this one particular theme that market efficiency is impossible without market timing is one that has not been voiced before, I'm sure of that, and needs to be, because market efficiency is what we all should be seeking. So let's talk about that. Market efficiency, you probably heard the term, you probably don't really know what it is. But let me just say, it's very important. Market efficiency is the reason for all of the conventional investing advice the past 30 years. You know, timing doesn't work, buy and hold, stocks for the long run, all this sort of thing comes from a belief in market efficiency. Market efficiency is something that was dreamed up. Dreamed up sounds harsh, but it was imagined by the academics. Market efficiency does not exist in the way that it's described. It does exist, but it doesn't exist in the way it's described. And the academics were not, certainly they were not doing anything intentionally to hurt anyone. They were doing the best they could, as humans do, as a general rule. So I don't mean to be, I don't mean to be harsh. Certainly not in terms of intent. But they did make mistakes, and they have not been willing to acknowledge those mistakes for a long time now, after the academic research showed that the understanding of how market efficiency works was off the mark. So, But market efficiency is, so it's a very, very important concept. And there's a lot written about it in the literature, but what it really just means is market rationality. That's, if they, I don't know why they didn't use the word rationality. It would have been much more clear. If they had said the rational market, everybody would know what they were saying. Maybe that's why they didn't do it. Maybe they didn't want it to be so obvious. But what they're saying is that the market is rational when they say it's efficient. And if the market is rational, all the things in the conventional investing wisdom are true. I mean, they all follow logically. These are not dumb people. They're very smart people. Very smart people, very hardworking people, well-intentioned people. You know, they put forward many, many wonderful insights. I did a podcast on that recently, all the wonderful things we learned from the people who have promoted buy and hold passive investing. So we learned a lot from them, and the ideas explored at the site wouldn't be possible without them, but I do wish that they could lower the arrogance a little bit and let in some new ideas, you know, let in some openness to new ideas. But market efficiency is essentially market rationality. That's a clearer way of saying it. And so the assumption of this model is investors are pursuing their self-interest. And because they're pursuing their self-interest, market prices are set at the right place. And so see, all these other things follow from that. If the market price is set at the proper place, well, you can't beat the market, can you? Because the price is already right. You can't outsmart it because the market got it right. And the idea is that, well, if there's some individual investor who gets it wrong, that doesn't cause a problem because someone else will jump in and quote-unquote exploit the mistake and thereby pull the price back to where it should be. So they don't say that the market price is exactly right, but what they say is it's closer to right than anyone else could get. So you can't beat it. You can't time the market because you're not aware of any flaws in how the market has set price. So there's no way to gain an edge. You can study the market from now to doomsday, you're not going to gain an edge. So this is why the whole idea of, it's actually why the idea of investing in indexes came along. You know, this is why these ideas are all sort of tied together in people's heads. They think indexing and passive investing are the same thing, and they're not at all the same thing. Indexing is wonderful. Passive investing is horrible. But they all sort of got pulled in at the same time. And they were developed by the academics, these ideas, in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And then they entered the practical world of investing when John Bogle founded Vanguard Group. And I think that might have been 76, something like that. And then they just grew and grew and grew. Through the bull market, they became more and more and more popular. So that today, these ideas have caused the greatest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States. But they're so enlodged in the public consciousness that we're having a hard time getting a hearing on you know, the errors that were made. But the idea of this idea of market efficiency, we all, you know, I'm always trying to pull the passives and the rationals together. You know, let's be friends. When we all should want market efficiency. It's hard for me to imagine how anyone would think market efficiency was a bad thing. You know, you want a rational market. You're going to be investing in the stock market to provide for your retirement. You want it to be as rational as possible, so you want it to be as efficient as possible. So an efficient market should be universally recognized as good, and I think it pretty much is. I don't know of anyone who opposes market efficiency. So that's something we all should be able to agree on. We all should also be able to agree that market efficiency is the natural state of the market. This is where the academics sort of got on the wrong track. What they did, and academics are a bit prone to this. Academics, you know, I sometimes call them ivory tower eggheads. Doesn't mean I don't love them. I love every one of them. I love going to school. I went to school many years. I mean, I finished college. I went to law school. I even did an extra year of law school. I did 4 years. I got a master's in tax law. So what is that? Bob Dylan said 20 years of school and they put you on day shift. I had more than 20, I think. How many is it? 8? 16? No, just about 20. I guess it's 8. And then college would get you to what? 16? I didn't go to kindergarten. So that would get you to 16, and then 4 years of law school would get you to 20, but I actually skipped a year there somewhere and last year of high school. So I guess I had 19, but anyway, 19. But I had about 20 years of schooling. So I belong in the day shift in Dylan's thinking. So I love school. I love school. So the idea that, when I say ivory tower eggheads, it's just a little, it's a friendly joke. It's a joke, but it's a friendly joke. It's not meant to be harsh. But it is certainly true that academics, what academics have that the practical people don't have is they work on this theory and they really come up with stuff. People in the practical world don't give them the credit they deserve. They develop the engine that drives everything. And the practical people make all the money. So I love the academics. But they do, the absent-minded professor is not a myth. I mean, people that do this stuff, they tend to get caught up in their ideas and they lose track of the real world sometimes. So that's what happened. And so they came up with this idea that, that the market's efficient. The way they should have said it is, what if the market were efficient? And I think that's how it started. My guess, I wasn't there. My guess is that's how it started. It sort of started as a what if exercise. What if the market were efficient? Oh, that would be interesting. Here's what would happen. And that's helpful. That's good. Playing these mind games, that can be good. You can learn stuff. You can develop insights. But then they sort of got carried away. They started writing these papers and winning these Nobel Prizes. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, the market is efficient. And then, unfortunately, Bogle did a wonderful thing in pulling all this stuff out of the academic world and making it, the investor world. I think it was great in that it made investing more scientific instead of just being opinion. So I thought that was good. But the trouble was when he pulled this theory and made it a money thing, the stock selling industry is a, huge industry. And now it wasn't just a scientific inquiry. It was, we got millions of dollars riding on this. And they learned that they made a mistake. Robert Shiller's research in 1981 showed that they made a mistake. They got it wrong. The market's not instantly efficient. And they don't. The story of our times is, I think it's the biggest story of our times, is that they don't want to acknowledge that. So they just keep going forward, pretending that it's efficient when we know that it's not, if we follow the literature. And the this has caused, trillions and trillions of dollars in losses, 15 trillion roughly in losses, and gets worse every day. So, but we all, but there is, so we all should want market efficiency. And I think we all can agree that there has to be some kind of tendency or inclination toward market efficiency because, and Drip Guy pointed this out in a discussion I had with him once, the purpose of a market is to set prices right. I mean, that, when you talk about dealing for a car, going to a car dealership, the purpose of your negotiation, and maybe not to you, the purpose to you is to get a low price, and the purpose to the dealer is to get a high price. But the purpose of the market is to set the price properly. The whole idea of a market, the genius of markets is that people pursue their self-interest. They're not doing this out of, love for their fellow man. They're just pursuing. They're pursuing their self-interest, but because they have a competing interest, the result is that prices are set properly or at least close to it, and that causes all sorts of wonderful things from an economic standpoint. So I think we all should be able to agree that markets try to be rational or try to be efficient. So we've got a lot of common ground. The rationals and the passives have a lot of common ground. Well, where is the rub? Well, the rub in the eyes of the average person is, this market's, you tell us this market's efficient, you tell us put all our money in it, you tell us prices go to insane levels, don't worry about it, just leave all your money in stocks, it's all going to work out in the long term, and we get wiped out, we lose all our retirement money. What's the deal here? So the public doesn't like it that they lose their money. See, the public is intensely practical. They just don't want to lose our money. I don't care about the theory. Well, if you don't want to lose your money, you have to understand the flaw in the theory. So if you understand the flaw in the theory, you'll be able to invest rationally which is what you want to do. The way to invest rationally, in a nutshell, is to buy stocks the way you buy everything else, the way you buy bananas and cars and comic books. Buy when the price is good. Don't buy when the price is bad. Buy when the value proposition is strong. Don't buy when the value proposition is bad. That's the answer, I believe. You can't know whether the price is... I don't believe you can know what the price is going to do in a year. Short-term timing doesn't work. That insight, they were right. Short-term timing doesn't work. Nobody knows in a year where the stock price is going to be. So forget it. But long-term timing always works. Same historical data that shows that short-term timing never works shows that long-term timing always works. And common sense tells us it must always work. Because if long-term timing didn't work, that would mean the price didn't affect the value proposition, which is crazy. I mean, it's logically impossible. So, you know, buy stocks when the price is good. And when stocks are insanely overvalued, don't put a lot of your money in stocks or you're going to get hurt. In the long term, maybe not the short term, but definitely in the long term. So, what the public doesn't like is they lose their money. So there are a lot of people today questioning buy and hold. You know, what's the story here? I listen to all these experts. I lose all my money. You know, it's a deal. And the deal is the market is not instantly efficient, which is what the buy and hold people tell us, that, you know, the market in one day is efficient. The price is always right. The reality, according to the historical data, according to the rational model, is the market price can be insanely wrong in the short term, but it's always striving toward efficiency. But it takes time. The market is gradually efficient. So ordinarily, in 10 years, you can have a pretty good fix. In other words, if you buy stocks today, you can look at the stock return predictor, and it'll tell you, the historical data will tell you, in 10 years, you're likely to get, I think the number today is somewhere around 3.5. I haven't looked at it lately, but you can check it out. Somewhere around there, 3.5 real annualized. That's the most likely. Could be less, could be more, but somewhere in that neighborhood is the most likely result. Big difference from if we were at fair price, the most likely would be 6.5. If we were at those insane prices we were at the top of the bubble, the most likely would be a negative number. If we fall to 1/2 fair value, as we usually do in the aftermath of a huge bull market, that's probably still ahead of us, the most likely return will go up to 15% real per year for 10 years. So it's a varying number. The likely return varies according to valuations. And the reason it varies is because the market is not instantly efficient, but only gradually efficient. And so if you buy at fair value, there's a good chance you're going to be somewhere around fair value in 10 years because the market's always striving to be at fair value. If you buy at insanely high prices, you're probably going to lose most of your money as the market works its way down to fair value. If you buy at insanely low prices, you're probably going to do amazing because the market works its way up to fair value. So you have to know how far off from fair value you are in order to know what's likely going to happen to you in the long term. So that's the mistake, according to Rob Bennett. And the rational theory, the rational investing model says markets are indeed efficient, but only gradually so, not instantly so. Therefore, long-term, the market is efficient in the long-term, but it's not efficient in the short-term. So what happens in the short-term? Why are prices not set properly in the short-term? Well, in the short-term, there's this thing inside, humans buy stocks, and there's this thing inside humans called the get-rich-quick impulse. We all have it, and the get-rich-quick impulse tells us, hey, forget market efficiency. Pump those prices up as high as you can, Buster, because you're voting yourself a raise. Why not? If we all just get together and we say, hey, let's double the stock price, let's triple the stock price, we're all a lot richer in the short term, not in the long term, because the market's going to return to fair value. So in the long term, that pumping up does nothing. We just fool ourselves. We create some temporary wealth, and then it goes poof, like cotton candy nothingness. But in the short term, we love it. We're all drawn to it. So that's the problem with stocks. The problem with stocks is the get-rich-quick impulse. You got to do something about that, Or you're going to have these boom and bust cycles where we pump up prices insanely and then we lose everything and the economy is destroyed and then we start over again, which is crazy. So what we should all want to do is to have stability in valuations. We should want to cut back this volatility, not have these booms and busts. How do we do that? The way we do that is by teaching people the realities of stock investing. This is what I'm always pushing. I'm saying we should open the internet to honest posting on stock investing, because if we did that, people could learn. Middle class investors could come to the internet and learn the realities. And when they learn the realities, they're going to follow the realities. Well, what is the reality? The reality is, look at the stock return predictor. That's the basic tool we use. It tells you every time prices go up, there's your portfolio value goes up, which is a plus, but your long-term return goes down every time. Every time. You make some money in the short term, you lose it in the long term. Every time the price goes down, you lose some money in the short term, but the long-term return goes up. So price, in that sense, is irrelevant. It's a non-event. Price changes. Every short-term gain equals a long-term loss, and every short-term loss equals a long-term gain. It's like a mathematical equation. Now, does that mean stock prices always remain the same? No. Stock prices don't remain the same. Why? Because stock prices reflect economic realities, and the U.S. economy has been sufficiently productive for many, many, many years to support a 6.5 real return for stock investors. So stock price does not remain the same, but the valuation level in a rational world does. The valuation level in a rational world is always a PE10 level of 14. PE10 is the price of a broad index over the average of the last 10 years of earnings. PE10 level in a rational market would always stay roughly the same, roughly 14, maybe 15, somewhere around there. So in a rational world, in an efficient world, what would happen is every year you would earn 6.5. And I think that would be wonderful. People will say, oh, what about if there's a recession? No, that doesn't matter, because a recession does lower earnings in the short term, but it increases it in the long term because you're going to get out of the recession in the long term. And when you get out of the recession, there's going to be a boom. It could take off like a rocket. Not today, but the stock price isn't just about today. The stock price is a discounted, it's the discounted value of all future earnings. So says Warren Buffett. So you're not going to have a, if we have some little recession, yeah, it affects in the short term. It shouldn't affect the stock price. Not if the market were efficient, not if the market were rational. So in an efficient market, which is what we all should want, we would earn 6.5 real per year, roughly, in stocks, a broad index. And the valuation level would always remain somewhere around 14, 15, 14 or 15. So that should be the goal. Well, why doesn't that happen? It doesn't happen because if you read an introductory textbook about free markets, what we're talking about here, the whole conventional model of stock investing, the buy and hold passive investing model, it's all about the power of the market. That's the whole deal. But if you read what is it that makes a free market work, I remember this when I went to school many years ago, but I remember reading it in one of those books, elementary textbook. Free markets don't just automatically exist. They're not, determined by God. They exist. One of the things you have to have a free market is access to information. What's happening in a free market is all the participants are making choices to pursue their self-interest. Well, they can't make effective choices if they don't have information, if they don't understand what's happening. Well, what's happened in the United States is we, for 30 years, the stock selling industry has been spending hundreds of millions of dollars telling us buy and hold, buy and hold, buy and hold, buy and hold, buy and hold. Timing doesn't work, timing doesn't work, timing doesn't work. Stocks for the long run, stocks for the long run. And advertising works, as you know. We live in a consumer wonderland. A lot of money in this country goes into advertising. Well, when they repeat these marketing slogans over and over and over again, lots of people come to believe them. And when you believe all these marketing slogans are the opposite of what works. So when millions of people come to believe the opposite of what works, you don't have a free market. You have a marketing-driven market. You have a stock-selling industry-driven market. We have a market that is serving the stock-selling industry. Yes, we're all buying stocks, tons of money going to the stock-selling industry, but we're raping our economy while doing it. We're destroying, we're hollowing out the core. We're mismanaging resources. We're destroying middle-class wealth. We're causing recessions, causing depressions. This is what we're doing. Not intentionally, but this is the net effect. So what the market needs to function, to have an efficient market, the market needs to function. And in order to function, there has to be price discipline. This is elementary. A market cannot work without price discipline. How is price discipline achieved in the stock market? It's achieved through market timing. The dreaded word. Nobody's allowed to speak. Market timing. Not short-term market timing. Not you know, day trading, jumping in and out, all this silliness. No, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. It was a good tip when they told us not to engage in short-term timing. That was helpful. That was good. Long-term market timing is paying attention to price. Changing your stock allocation at different price levels. When stocks are well-priced, you want to own a lot of them. Maybe, you know, 90% when they're low priced, maybe 60% when they're moderately priced, maybe 30% when they're priced as they were from 1996 through 2008. Dangerous, insane prices. You don't want to own a lot of stocks at those prices because you're going to suffer a wipeout of your accumulated wealth of a lifetime, okay? Price discipline is what it's all about. Price discipline is what makes the stock market go round. When you have millions of dollars devoted to telling people not to exercise price discipline, to buy and hold, which is the opposite of price discipline. Buy and hold says ignore price. Buy no matter what. Get those commissions into the stock selling industry. Sure, you know, giving up your hopes for a decent retirement, but hey, pays off for us, pays off for the experts. We've lost price discipline. And we've destroyed the U.S. economy, and now we're destroying the U.S. political system because of the losses suffered. That's what I believe. The middle class is scared, and the middle class is losing confidence in its leaders, and I think rightfully so, because they're not addressing the problem. They're ducking it, and we've known. The academic research showing that valuations affect long-term returns was published in 1981, 28 years ago. So there's no excuse. There's no excuse. I never went to investing school, never managed a fund. If I could search the internet and find this stuff out and talk things over with my community members and figure this stuff out, you know, these people that are getting paid million-dollar salary should be able to do it. I ain't getting paid no million-dollar salary. Ask my wife. All right. So we need to educate people as to the reality. So the bottom line here is educating people. The realities means teaching people that market timing, long-term market timing is required for long-term investing success, not optional. It's not just that timing works or the timing is okay to consider or that timing might work or but timing is possible. It's that long-term timing is required. If you don't engage in long-term timing, you're doomed. Says Rob Bennett. Why? Because the most important thing that you do as an investor is choose your stock allocation. And the proper stock allocation changes. As I say, if you're a moderate risk investor, 30% allocation might be right at those insane prices we were at for 12 years. And 60% at moderate prices and 90% at low prices, super low prices. in order to keep your risk level constant, you've got to change your stock allocation. Stocks are much, 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 much riskier at the prices they were selling before the crash. They were riskier then than they are now. They're still risky now, but they're a lot less risky now than they were before the crash. And after the next crash, they're going to be a lot less risky. Well, we don't know when that's going to come. Can't short-term time. But we know it's likely that it's going to come. So we need price discipline, and price discipline is achieved through market timing, long-term market timing. So without market timing, there is no efficient market. This was the big mistake, and I do think it was a mistake. Please understand, I mock the stock selling industry because, you know, I think they failed in their responsibilities. That's the reason I do that. I feel they have a responsibility to try to get it right, and I do think a lot of these people are on the pig-headed side. They're arrogant. They don't like to admit mistakes. And they're destroying, you know, our economy, which ultimately destroys the stock selling industry too. You know, if the economy's destroyed, they're destroyed. They're destroying their reputations. And I don't think they want to, but they don't like to admit mistakes. But what they did was they imagined immediate efficiency. They didn't prove it. Don't tell me they proved it. There's no study ever showing that the market is efficient. There's no study ever showing that valuations don't affect long-term returns. If valuations affect long-term returns, the market can't be instantly efficient. If the market were instantly efficient, that would mean it was instantly well-priced. If it were well-priced, there's no such thing as overvaluation. The concepts don't even make sense together. If the market's efficient, the market's well-priced. If it's well-priced, it can't be overvalued, can it? The very word over in front of value tells you it's mispriced. Overvalued equals mispriced. The market was valued at 3x fair value in January 2000. It was mispriced, not a little bit, but a whole big bunch. That's why the most likely long-term return in January 2000 was a negative number. Most likely return for stocks in January 2000 was a negative number. So market timing is the answer. Not short-term market timing, but long-term market timing. Long-term market timing is the answer to what the world needs today. We do need efficient markets. We don't have them. And when you assume we already have them, you lose, you cause them not to exist. When you assume you have them and you tell people not to long-term time, not to incorporate price discipline into the market, you destroy the efficient market. So if only we would teach middle-class investors to engage in long-term timing, then this dream of Eugene Fama and Burton Malkiel and John Bogle would come true. We would have efficient markets if, the biggest word in the English language, if we would open the internet up to honest posting and allow people to learn what they need to learn to invest effectively for the long term, then we would have efficient markets. But you can't have both. You can't say we want to have efficient markets, but yet we're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars telling people buy and hold, buy and hold, buy and hold. You can't have it both ways. Because buy and hold means you're not changing your stock allocation in response to price change. You can't have an efficient market that way. So, now, before closing, I wanted to just list the benefits of what I'm pushing for. You see, this is one of the great ironies. I am pushing for efficient markets. I want the market to be more efficient. Why? An efficient market is a market without volatility. And a perfectly efficient market, the valuation level would be, the P10 level would be roughly 14 every year, always. And the return on stocks would be roughly 6.5. You wouldn't have these crazy booms and busts. Well, I made a list here of 15 benefits if we eliminated volatility, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to read my writing on all of them, but if I can, I'll go through them. One, no more volatility. If we had an efficient market, if we did what we needed to do to get an efficient market, if we educated middle-class investors about the need to engage in long-term timing, we would eliminate volatility, and volatility is what makes stocks a pain in the neck. Stocks are wonderful in terms of the returns they offer. But because of this volatility, they make people crazy. They make people scared. They make people anxious. And they make people broke. Because depending on when you buy stocks, you might end up with a great return. And you might end up busted. No more volatility. That's a biggie. Two, greatly diminished risk. Well, if you diminish volatility, you've diminished risk. If we can change this, and we can, if we could just educate each other, we don't need the stock selling industry to tell us it's okay, in my opinion. We just do it. Just go to the internet. We got the technology. Let's just share. Let's ask questions. Let's be skeptical. Don't take Rob's word for it. But I see no reason why we can't set up some places on the internet and share and ask questions and learn together. It was my idea when I built that Motley Fool board. That was the idea, that retire early board, to learn together. That was the motto at Motley Fool. So we can do that. If we do that, we eliminate volatility. If we eliminate volatility, we eliminate risk, don't we? Are stocks risky if they pay 6.5 real every year? Is that risk? That's not risk. That's safe. Stocks can be a lot safer than they are today if we could do what we have to do to make the market efficient, and that is promote market timing. That's the key. Benefit number three to having an efficient market. Not only do we get diminished risk, we do it with no reduction in return. Now, if you listen to the ivory tower eggheads, they'll say, whoa, wait a minute. If you're going to reduce risk, you're going to reduce return. No, I don't think so. The return isn't some negotiated price where somebody, the Mr. Stockman in the sky says, hey, you want 6.5, you're going to have to take on risk, buddy. No, the return is all you're doing is that when you buy an index fund, you buy a share of the U.S. economy. The U.S. economy generates 6.5. That's what you get. There's no compensation for risk. Stocks do not have to be risky in order for you to get 6.5, says Rob Bennett. If I'm wrong, tell me where I'm wrong. Argue with me. But if I'm right, I'd be grateful if you acknowledge that it makes sense and share the word, because we need more people to learn about this stuff. I can't make the market efficient by myself. I need your help. I need lots of people's help. But I see no reason why the return has to drop just because the risk has to drop. There's not a necessary correlation there, as a lot of the quote-unquote experts will tell you. Four, benefit four, we have greater equality of in returns and wealth. I think that's a good thing, you know? I like to see equality. I don't like to necessarily always see the government stepping in and mandating it, but I sure think equality is a good thing. When it's achieved fair and square, and I see no reason why, I don't see how volatility has any good side. You know, some people got into stocks. They happened to save enough money to get invested in stocks, say in 1975, and they enjoyed 25 years of great returns before the bad times came. Other people only saved enough to invest in stocks in 2000, and they've had 10 years of bad times, no good times. You know, it's not fair. Not fair, Mom. If we do away with volatility, if we make the market efficient, by timing, we even that out. We even that out. Your returns are no longer a quirk of the year you happen to accumulate enough assets to invest in stocks. We give equal returns to people in, you know, all whatever age they are, whatever time they happen to accumulate the wealth they need to invest in stocks. Point five, enhanced frugality. There's a big problem in this country that people don't save enough. Well, one of the reasons people don't save enough is they don't have a clear statement of what they've got. They don't know how much they need to save. When you had money in a stock fund, in an index fund in January 2000, they were sending you a portfolio statement that said you had three times what you really had. If you had $100,000, they were saying you had $300,000. Well, what's that cause you to do? When your portfolio statement says 300 instead of 100, if you're human, it causes you to spend more. It causes you to spend more money on houses and cars and vacations and lots of other things. You know, you're thinking about, should I go out to dinner tonight or should I stay home and make my dinner myself? And you say, oh, I got $100,000. I'm a little behind on what I need for retirement. I think I'll cook my own dinner. You say, oh, I got 300. I'm way above what I need. Yeah, what the heck do I need this making dinner stuff? It's perfectly natural. We destroy frugality when we give people these phony baloney numbers for how much is in their portfolio statement. We should give them accurate numbers, which means valuation adjusted numbers. The stocks were valued at 3x fair value. We should have been sending portfolio statements saying nominal value 300, real value 100,000. Then people would know the real story. And it would change their behavior. It would make it what? It would make it more rational, which means it would make the market more efficient. And it would make people more frugal, which is good. Number six, economic stability, fewer recessions. A point I make over and over again because it just blows my mind when I think about it. I don't say that the promotion of buy and hold is the cause of every economic crisis suffered in the United States in the last 100 years. But I say something not too far from that. I say it's the primary cause, not the only cause. There are other factors. But go back to the year 1900. And look forward, the historical data. What you will find is there have been four economic crises in that time. Every single one of them was preceded by heavy promotion of the buy and hold concept, the concept that you don't need to take valuations into consideration when setting your stock allocation. Every one. Every time we let the PE10 level to get up to 25, which is insane, and which can only be achieved when millions of people come to believe the price doesn't matter, every time we did that, we suffered a stock crash and an economic crisis. Average loss in stock prices on those four occasions, 68% real. We did this to ourselves, friends and neighbors. We caused this. If we had paid attention to the historical data, or if the experts had, if they had studied the literature, they would have known that we were causing an economic crisis with our buy and hold mantras. We gotta knock off the funny business. So in an efficient market, we would have more economic stability. Seven, we'd have more political stability. You know, this is what I say. This economic instability brings on political instability. It brings on, you know, anger, lack of trust. When people lose trust in our political system and our political leaders, we have a problem. Serious problem. I don't think it's a joke. And it's a problem today. Number eight, benefit eight, we increase the returns from safe asset classes. You see, people always say, they pretend, or they believe. I mean, they're not pretending. They do believe it, but I don't think it's true. A lot of people say, you know, there's some sort of market force setting that 6.5 return from stocks. They're rewarding you for risk. I don't think it's true. It's paid because of that's what productivity generates in the U.S. or always has anyway. But the other asset classes are set by market forces, the returns. So when a certificate of deposit decides how much is going to be returned, that, you know, there's some banker somewhere making a decision, and he is looking at the alternatives. He's saying, how much can people get in stocks? How much are they going to demand in CDs, given what they can get in stocks? If we take away the risk of stocks so that stocks are paying 6.5 every year, it's going to be a lot harder to sell CDs. Stocks are just going to continue paying 6.5 because that's what productivity is going to support. But CDs, to be competitive, are going to have to increase their returns. Same thing with I-bonds. Same thing with TIPS. So the safer asset classes, today they're safer. They may not be that much safer in the future, are going to increase their returns in order to remain competitive. Well, that's another boon to middle-class investors. It's great. Number nine, stocks will become more understandable. Stocks confuse a lot of people today. Well, the confusing thing is this volatility, you know? That's the source of it all. I've been having discussions with this guy that runs the Behavior Gap blog, and it's a great blog, and he talks about, you know, investor behavior. It's not rational, and he's right. He makes a lot of good points, but the root problem with the behavior gap is this crazy volatility, which is caused by the promotion of buy and hold investing. That's the root problem. Do away with that. Do away with the promotion of buy and hold. You know, tell people they've got to engage in long-term timing, and prices will stabilize, or at least valuations will stabilize. And when valuations stabilize, stock investing becomes simple. You don't have to read books and all this stuff. You have to sweat it out. Pay 6.5. You want 6.5? Put your money in an index fund. You'll get it. You know, simple as that. ABC. What scares people is they don't understand. They say, what? I put my money in, saved my whole lifetime. It's all gone. It's all complicated and scary and messed up because of the promotion of buy and hold. That's the problem. This crazy idea that you don't need to look at the price of stocks when you buy them. That is crazy. And it's dangerous. And it's the result of a mistake that the academics made a long time ago. And they, you know, I'd like to see them fix that mistake. But one of the benefits of an efficient market is all these other asset classes would come to pay higher returns. Stocks would be understandable. More would be in stocks. Benefit number 10. People, as stocks became more understandable, more would be in stocks. I think that's good. Stocks should be for the middle class, not just for the rich. They are more for the middle class today, but a lot are leaving them today because of all this crazy stuff. I don't like that. I think that it's the ticket to middle class financial freedom. So I'd like to see the middle class in stocks. More people would feel comfortable investing in stocks if volatility were reduced. To reduce volatility, we've got to have market timing. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I don't want volatility, but I still want to preach buy and hold. Can't have it. It's one or the other. You want buy and hold, you're going to get stock crashes. You're going to get economic crises. You're going to get wipeouts. You're going to get failed retirements. Benefit 11, with an efficient market, we'd have better allocation of economic resources. You see, this is what a market really does. It's everybody thinks about stocks, and all they think about is, what's my return going to be? Everybody's got their little selfish perspective, and that's natural and understandable. But what the thing is about in a big picture sense is, markets are about allocating economic resources. The reason capitalism, you know, produces a lot of good stuff is that it's good at allocating resources properly. The money gets funneled into productive endeavors, which makes us all richer. Makes the, you know, particular entrepreneur running the company richer, but it makes us all richer to a lesser extent because resources are going to the right things, whereas government-controlled economies, it's left to some bureaucrat to allocate resources, and bureaucrats just aren't as good at it as the markets are, mainly because the information bits travel more effectively in a functioning market, not in the stock market today, but in a functioning market where information is freely available. So, if we made the market efficient by promoting market timing, stopping this buy and hold gibberish, what you would have is a better allocation of resources. Just think about an example in the year 2000, where stocks were priced at 3 times fair value. Say you're trying to sell a car that's fuel efficient, or a house, it's on the small side. It's hard to sell these things because people think they have a lot more money than they do. And they say, I don't want a small house. I want a McMansion. You know, I don't want no fuel-efficient car. I want a sports car. It's a misallocation of resources. People aren't really getting what they want or what they would want if they knew how much wealth they had. But they're being told a lie about how much wealth they have. That's what overvaluation is. It's a lie. To use a blunt term for it. You tell people they have $300,000 in wealth when they really have $100,000, that's a lie. It's a lie that hurts them, but it also hurts the economy as a whole because it causes money to flow to the wrong businesses. It's a misallocation of resources. It makes us all poorer. This is what pays for all these great benefits I'm talking about. You know, people are going to say, the people who believe in the passive model, they're going to say, oh, Rob, you're talking about a free lunch, all these 15 benefits. Well, you can't have any benefits. That's impossible. That'd be a free lunch. No, the benefit is we're allocating resources more effectively. Naturally, there's going to be huge benefits from that. There's going to be a huge payoff for everybody, the entire society. When you do the right thing, benefits follow. So we would have better allocation of resources in an efficient market. We would have more innovation, benefit 12, because the money would be flowing to the right businesses, the businesses that did the right things, the businesses that were creative and hardworking. And that would bring secondary benefits, because when you have more innovation, you've got, then everything starts moving faster. Everybody's working more effectively. Productivity goes up. Benefit 13, you'd have fewer failed marriages. You know, people don't like to talk about failed marriages in investing podcasts, but why not? This crazy buy and hold stuff causes destruction of wealth, which causes families to be destroyed. It causes friction in marriages. And I don't like that. And you don't like it. So let's work together to stop it. This is a way to help reduce the number of failed marriages. I'm not kidding. Buy and hold causes failed marriages. I'm going to make a bumper sticker. Hopefully it'll catch on. Buy and hold causes failed marriages, you know? Let's get to the nitty gritty. Hundreds of Benefit 14, hundreds of investing insights, you know. All, just look over the material. Look over the podcast at the site. Look over the articles. Look over the calculators. Look over the blog entries. Investing insight upon investing insight. We reached all these things as a community, me usually being the one writing it down. How? By just giving up on the buy and hold idea. I gave up on that idea when I saw that the first thing we did was show that the numbers in the retirement studies were wrong. And at that point, you know, I thought we were going to go to people and get it changed. And then all these people came back and said, well, Rob, you know, we can't give, you know, Scott Burns told me, oh, Rob, to give accurate retirement numbers, that'd be catastrophically unproductive, Rob, we can't do that. I'm like, what? Catastrophically unproductive to give accurate numbers for people planning their retirements, huh? That's crazy talk. Well, that's the world we live in. But you give this nonsense up. You know, you make the market efficient, tell people what they need to do to make the market efficient, and then we can generate hundreds of wonderful insights. We can generate real retirement calculators that give accurate numbers. We can give people better information about setting their allocations and better information about risk and better information about, you know, how to invest as a young person and how to invest as an old person and all these sorts of things. It all follows. Benefit 15. We retire 5 years sooner on average. That's what the calculators tell us. There's a calculator at the website, the Investment Strategy Tester. It indicates if you switch to the valuation-informed indexing approach, it will vary. There's not one answer, but it will vary. But in on average, you can expect to retire roughly 5 years sooner. Pretty big benefit. That means people are freed up to do all kinds of things with their time that they couldn't do before. You know, they can. Some are just going to, you know, sleep late. But some are going to go out and start foundations. Some are going to go visit the sick, you know, help the environment. Some are going to invent things. Some are going to read all the great books. Some are going to spend more time with their families or their friends. Some are going to start businesses where they don't need the money. They just do it for the kicks. And maybe they'll do something great. So, that's what got me started on this road in the first place. The idea of early retirement, something I believe in. Financial freedom. Gives freedom, I think, is a good. It amazes me, astounds me that, you know, we get so much flack for just trying to help people achieve financial freedom early in life. I've said this before, I'll say it again. There's not one person on planet Earth who is hurt by learning how to invest effectively. Not one person. And even if all the ideas are wrong, not one person hurt because by erring of the ideas, because erring of the ideas can do two things. It can either cause the ideas to prevail, which means we all benefit, or it can cause the ideas to fail, which should make the people who believe in buy and hold that much more confident that they were able to submit their idea to a test, to a challenge in reasoned civil debate, and it survived. That should make them more confident, and a more confident investor is a more effective investor. So there is no downside to allowing the discussions to go to a bigger stage, as I propose. Those are my thoughts on the subject matter of the day. Today's sermon, it's a Sunday, today's sermon, market timing is the mechanism by which market efficiency is attained. The passives and the rationals agree market efficiency is a good thing. The rationals say we can only have it with market timing. The passives say no market timing, can't do that. Dirty word. I don't think it's a dirty word. Market timing is price discipline. That's what it is. Markets don't work without price discipline. So let's stop the nonsense of pretending that investors can be successful without market timing, long-term market timing. Another bumper sticker. Long-term market timing rocks, says Robin. All right. Good luck with your investing strategy.